What's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning? Breathe in some gratitude, stretch like a cat, look out the window to appreciate the nature, or do you reach for your smartphone, check your missed calls, text messages, work emails, open Twitter to see all the news you've missed, open Instagram to see all the events your friends didn't invite you to, and spend the next hour getting ready for your day while not realizing your phone has become an appendage you may become ill without, inspiring the next David Cronenberg movie? Welcome to Bitch Out of Water, a show where we talk about how the hell to survive experiencing life, existence, and the human condition, which is now vastly impacted by technology. Do our phones and social media give us short-term happiness, but long-term loneliness and isolation? Or can they create real human connection? We're the World Girls, three women who love each other for our vast differences, and our relationships with our phones are definitely not the same. I'm Dorina. I turned my social media notifications off years ago because I think smartphones are a disease. I'm here with Steph Sabra, who has a phone with a record number of unread notifications and may not ever reply to your text message or email. How you doing, mija?
Stop yelling at me. Lower your tone, Dorina. No, I was thinking one of my favorite quotes from Wednesday Addams, the show, was when she's like, I find social media to be a void full of self-affirmations, something like that. And I was like, yeah, actually, that's exactly what it is.
We're also here with Roxy Stryer, who will reply to your text message before you send it and loves her phone possibly even more than you love your pet or your child.
I knew this was coming today because Dorina and Steph are slightly different with their social media and messages, but not that different. They're aligned in a lot of ways. I am the most extreme of all the extremes. I love social media. I love the happiness it brings me. I love my phone. I love being responsive. I love connecting to everybody at every second of every minute of every day. So I have a feeling I'm going to unravel some truths today that I really don't want to hear, but I'm ready for it. I'm ready.
That's right. We're already here. It really is true that our work, our social lives, and entertainment have become inextricably tied to our devices. To help us figure out if we can be happy with these appendages, we have amazing returning guest to the show, Dr. Drea Letamendi. Hola, mija.
Hola, thanks for having me on your show. As always, it's such a pleasure. And let me first say, I just want to affirm everyone so far, none of you are wrong. None of you are doing this wrong. You're doing what's right for you. But we'll do a deeper dive into some of your practices.
Yes, very excited to hear what Dr. Drea has to say, not just about everything, but this is definitely something that we're all going through literally every day. And I don't even know if social media addiction is real. So why don't we start with that, Drea? Like, is phone or social media addiction real? Are phones bad for humanity?
Great place to start. I will say, just to contextualize and frame some of the positives here. We're coming out of a pandemic. We're in a phase where we hopefully are getting kind of back to maybe what a post-pandemic world is going to look like. And just to be strength-based for a moment, our social media saved our lives. Like during the loneliness, the lockdown, the disconnection, the losing of jobs, all those things that happened, the ability to find connection, friendships, relationships, medical information, access, all those things. This social media could certainly have benefits. And the pandemic was one of those times in our lives when there's just a ton of evidence to show that for a lot of us, we needed to have social media. The answer to your question is a little complicated because yes, one can be addicted to social media. It is technically not a diagnostic label or medical label or psychiatric label at this time, but for clients who show this high usage of social media, difficulty or inability to stop using, Roxy, are you using it right now?
No, I was writing down the question, could you see social media being a medical diagnostic in a few years?
You're live tweeting as I talk.
Yeah, that kind of, you know, and I do feel like so far I'm winning the argument. The first thing you said was social media saved our lives. And I was like, 1 point for Roxy, as if this is a weird tennis match. Like,
Love it. Love it. I mean, let me just say, like, in the field of psychology, there are just a ton of us who have strong opinions about this because we see the negative impact it can have on our clients and on people in general. But I will say that the only choice we have as professionals is to embrace this and to lean into technology and better understand how to get in front of it, get control of it, be experienced in it. And I know that I can't disentangle my personal experience with social media. It is how I connect. It's how I, you know, got my job at UCLA. I didn't have an identity in the world until someone noticed the work that I was doing. And someone like me may not have those opportunities if it weren't for those communities and connections on certain platforms. So I think it's important, you know, let's really define the addiction piece, because I think it's important. Some people might be joining us and really concerned about their social media use. An addiction is going to be a pretty rare thing to identify. Typically, and again, even though there's no diagnosis for it, we would look at, are there obsessive compulsive symptoms? Is there this fixation or obsession with usage? We look at frequency of use and duration of use. So if someone is on social media more than 5 hours, this number is not a perfect number, right? But more than 5 hours a day, we're going to start to see some negative impact on their attention, their mood, their concentration. And as I was getting to, if there's the unsuccessful attempt to stop using social media, maybe someone tries to do like a digital detox, which we'll talk about, or quit a platform or stop using it and they can't stop, there's almost that fixation or compulsion about it, then yes, I would consider that a symptom of an addiction. You know, finally, I'd say that anytime we connect social media use to some kind of interference in someone's functioning, whether it's occupational functioning, social functioning, personal functioning, and it's significant, then we would point to this being a real clinical problem. But I'd say, and this is not an exact number, again, we don't have a diagnosis for it, but I'd say 90 to 95% of us using social media are likely not addicted to it, but we are experiencing a negative relationship with it because we are constantly trying to assert control over our social media use, but it tends to have the opposite effect. We know that every time we use social media, we get a little dopamine kick. It increases some feel-good chemicals in our brains, and that can feel good for a short while. So there's this fleeting aspect to it, which is kind of addictive, right? We kind of want that hit. But over time, there's more and more research that shows social media does more harm than good for our mental health unless we are proactive, purposeful, and really balanced with our social media use, which I can get into the details about when we talk about solutions.
So before we talk about solutions, we do need to talk about how you are able to self-identify if social media, I guess, is a problem for you, right? Because as you're describing it now, if there is not a medical diagnosis, how do you know which camp you're in? If you're in the category of actually this is doing more harm than good, or if you're in the, okay, I'm using this for the right reasons at the right times?
That's a great question. I'd say generally speaking, and this is something that, you know, goes for any advice that I share on the show, seek your medical or mental health provider to answer some of your more personal individual questions about your mental health. And so while these are general recommendations and ideas, it's always super helpful just to have somebody sit down with you and give you a very cohesive, comprehensive assessment. And it's always good to have someone listen to our personal stories and like what's going on with us. So that's like my first set of advice is like, you know, these are general tips and strategies and signs to look for. I will share that something that could be helpful, just if someone is like unsure about their relationship with social media, the first thing I do want to say about that and like checking in with yourself is it's normal to be kind of all over the map with social media, sometimes feeling good about it, sometimes feeling shitty about it. Sometimes having really good days on social media, using social media, sometimes like wanting to throw your phone on the street and have a car run over it, right? Like the variety of feelings we have about social media is very similar to the feelings we have with a real relationship. It is almost a parasocial relationship. That's sort of like an unreal fake relationship with something that gives us real emotional responses. So I'd say, you know, dig into that. When are you feeling good? Are you feeling good when you're on social media or just using social media? Are you feeling good when you're not using social media? It doesn't have to be a full-on journal, but maybe just kind of keep track of your mood and your feelings throughout the day. I'd say that if someone's looking for signs that they might have a problem with social media, I would definitely recommend doing kind of a deep dive, almost like an inventory. What are they doing with their social media? There's tons of different activities, engagement, you know, interrelationships. There's this concept of passive usage. So passive social media use is when we just go onto social media and trawl the different feeds and we don't add anything or engage. We're just sort of consuming everything in the feed. And some studies show that passive social media use is worse for our mental health because we are kind of attending to more of a distracting mode. We're tending not to interact in a positive way, and it can actually increase loneliness, increase feelings of inferiority, increase feelings of imposter syndrome or sort of like not belonging. And then finally, some studies do show that this like passive use, hours and hours of trawling the social media platforms, could be related to depression and suicidal ideation. So backing up a little bit, check in with like, what is my social media behavior? Could I maybe engage a little more? Should I think about the kinds of platforms I'm on? Are they more passive? Are they more active? And then, you know, again, take inventory of our responses and our feelings. How are we actually processing what we're looking at? And what is it keeping us from doing? I think that's an important part of exploring an addiction, is like, this addiction is getting in the way of X. What is it getting in the way of? My ability to function at school, my ability to get a job, my ability to spend time with family, you know, whatever that might be. So really explore that and better understand if it's something that is getting in the way of something and creating this helplessness for you.
Now, I know we're focusing on social media right now, but the reason I turned off my notifications a long time ago is because they were mostly like, hey, emojis and, you know, things that aren't really things that I connect to on a human level. And it's true that during the pandemic, it was very valuable to have that technology around to connect. But at the same time, even just emailing and text messaging with loved ones made me feel much emptier than actually talking to them on the phone. Because like, there's people that could text all day and they really enjoy that. It actually, I know for a fact, it depresses me. I would much rather have the human connection of, if not looking at your eyes, at least hear your voice, right? And your laughter and et cetera. So is that something that's unique to me? Do you have any understanding, or have you heard of research as to like, is it different for different people, or how it impacts everybody, whether it's, you know, with different backgrounds or generations, et cetera?
It is different for different people. What we're noticing based on the literature is that the amount of screen time just across the board is increasing and has, you know, pandemic or not, our technology is just giving us all these different opportunities for entertainment, connection, engagement. So we're spending upwards of 11 hours in front of a screen. Now, if you're sleeping, I don't know, hopefully you're sleeping at least 6 hours, 6 to 8 hours. 8 hours is ideal. Let's just say we're all sleeping 8 hours a night.
Definitely not Roxy.
I am, but my great friend Roxy, I don't know. Not to narc.
Feeling really good right now, guys. Feeling on top. Another point for Rox.
But, okay, let's sandwich this with a compliment. She is the most efficient and, like, effective person I've ever met. with that little, I've never seen anything like it. That's what I'm trying to say.
People, you know, they always say, like, imagine what the Beatles could have done if they weren't on drugs. People are like, imagine what Roxy could have done if she did actually sleep. Mm-hmm.
Hear a lot of things.
Yeah, everyone's different. Hypothetically, if we were on the screen or in front of a screen 11 hours and then sleeping it, like, we're just essentially in front of screens most of the time, more times than not. And not all of that screen time is social media. About 2 to 4 hours, 2 to 5 hours. 5 hours is a high user, and that's getting into some concerns. That's like actually on these social media platforms. Maybe we should be specific. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Hive, Mastodon, Snapchat, TikTok. You know, that's the general idea. And so, yeah, it's true. Different people have different reactions and different preferences. Some studies actually show that social media, specifically social media usage among young people in particular, and the literature really actually is biased towards like young people, 13 to 25, because who cares about the rest of us? No, I'm just kidding. That's a developmental age. And it's actually most people who like, basically, the majority of Instagram users are like under the age of 30. I think 40% are under the age of 22. So this is really the majority of users. But what studies are showing are that some people actually do really well with social media and find that it's affirming and useful. There's utility there. And then, you know, to your point, Darina, that some people, you know, have the opposite effect. And it's really amazing. There's neuroimaging studies and medical studies that show there's even changes in the brain based on hours of social media use. And some of those changes in the brain impact concentration, impact our ability to focus, impact all of our kind of executive functioning. This is a really important part of our brain where we're planning for the future. We're using kind of memory skills. We're using organizational skills, those kinds of things. So that's my long-winded way to say, like, there isn't an exact answer. And that a lot of times, despite all these studies, right, we have to also think about our own subjective experiences with social media and really do that individual deep exploration, the conceptual exploration is like, how, what is this really doing for me? And, you know, again, repeating myself a little bit, if you find that, you know, in the morning when you weren't using social media, you felt fine. And then after you were on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, you noticed a dip in your mood. That's data that's really critical. It's really useful for a person to kind of think about. As much as I embrace social media, I've actually noticed this happen like very specifically. There will be days where I've done a keynote or I've just booked a gig or a job, or, you know, something that I'm proud of myself for. And then I jump into Instagram and within seconds, I feel shitty again. Like, I'm not doing enough. I'm like nothing. I haven't, gosh, what's my next project? I gotta hustle. And I think that's because a lot of times what we're seeing on these platforms is the hustle culture, the accomplished culture, the competitive culture. And I think, you know, since it's important to note here too, for women, the constant pressure to look a certain way, to be a certain way, and to conform to what, you know, kind of the rest of the digital world approves of us. And that kind of pressure can be incredibly and critically impactful on our mental health.
Are some people just wired differently? Is it possible that two people could consume the same exact amount of social media on the same platform, say that's TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and they're spending the same amount of time on them. They're looking at the exact same things. And one of them that works for and the other it doesn't?
Well, we haven't seen, or at least I haven't seen, any research that supports that. But I would say, in a way, you know, yes, of course, we're all different. Generally, our brains are wired the same in that the part of your brain that handles and tolerates executive functioning and future orientation and planning, like that's in the same part of your brain than in compared to my brain, right? So the parts of the brain are the same. I'd say that the, you know, clearly some of us are more susceptible to depression, anxiety, mood disorders, suicidal ideation. And if maybe this can better answer the question, in that those of us who already have existing symptomatology around depression, anxiety, sleep disturbance, stress, really any kind of psychological distress, we will likely fall into the category where using social media, it is likely in those up numbers, you know, 4 or 5, 6 hours a day, is likely going to have a negative impact on us.
When you were talking about how social media is, a lot of it's targeted to people under 30 years old, reminded me of the documentary Social Dilemma, which was like the first time I started thinking about social media in a completely different way, and kind of the responsibility that it and the effect that it can have on the entire world. And when you're talking about like the targeting of the youth, and what's your position in terms of regulations? And do you think that like when they discuss regulations, would people like you have an effect on where that went, because you are the expert in that sense?
I love this question because it's happening. In 2021, there were these very critical, revealing articles released about Facebook. And actually, it was about Instagram, but you know, Facebook owns Instagram. And I believe it was the Washington Post initially that shared that not only were the researchers, the data scientists, and the folks in charge of basically assessing all this at Facebook knowledgeable about these trends and about the negative impact specifically Instagram was having on young people and their social media usage, they were publishing this internally and not really making any changes to their platforms. So it's only been, you know, a little over a year since all of this came to sort of the broader culture in media, at least. And it was realized when there were like literally PowerPoint slides and research findings and articles like internally to Facebook. The psychologists who were studying this were saying to the CEO and the executive leaders, look, Instagram is really hurting young people, specifically young women. Their research findings showed that girls as young as 12, 13 were thinking about suicide when they were on Instagram. It was, per their research, increasing their depression, their anxiety, their social anxiety in particular, and having this incredible negative impact on their body image in particular. And so Facebook had all this data about Instagram and about Facebook, and they did not, at least what was reported, is that they did not, first of all, release this information or make critical changes to their policies and practices until it was more public. So I'm not sure if this answers your question, but now there are these different tools that Facebook has created for Instagram and Facebook where like you can have basically one of the tools is like a little time device where you, you know, you toggle it on and after 30 minutes, it will sign you out or it will say like your time's up. I actually haven't used it, but it's a like a time limit basically. For a while, they piloted something called the Daisy Project, which is where they took away the likes. I think this happened on Facebook and it was unsuccessful. Like people were still reporting suicidality and depression and all these horrible feelings when going on the site. So they're trying. I think people like me are really essential to have as a part of the team. And there are scientists, specifically psychological scientists, who look at this sort of thing and who respond with these different models and these different tools and strategies. The reality is that, you know, it is unlikely that they will shut down the platform. And it's unlikely they're going to change anything like really characteristic about, like, Instagram is always going to be image focused, right? And video focused, right? So reels focused. So I think that it's a real challenge to modify that in a significant way. And, you know, how many people actually do know about these different tools and strategies to support mental health? I think they need to do a better job of sharing that information.
Well, at the end of the day, it is a product, right? And it seems that us humans have become a part of their product, right? Because the users have become the product. And this weird, you know, as much as I like Instagram for the purposes of following musicians and artists and photographers, and it's pretty to look at, I do also see the mall aspect of it, right? As well as the fakeness, the superficiality of it, that's not really the real world. I'm also interested in seeing how humans use this product, in the sense that it seems to me, I may be wrong, but it seems to me that humans are becoming more comfortable on a device where they can control their environment versus interacting with real human beings in the real world that are uncontrollable, right? Like if I'm talking to somebody in the real world, I can't mute them, right? Or I can't block them, right? Like you can on a lot of these apps. Do you see this happening, Drea, a lot? Or is it just my sad, non-optimistic imagination?
I think that, and let me know if this answers the question. What is interesting is that IRL, real life engagement and interactions, do advance and support our social emotional intelligence better than screen engagement. And that is a neurobiological thing. It's certainly an evolutionary thing when we are close to others. Like literally, I'm not saying like the relationship is close. I'm like our bodies are close to each other. We are able to, as humans, we're very sophisticated in reading micro level behaviors and expressions and being able to pick up on cues for the most part. And those deeper interactions do have benefit to our well-being, specific to our social and emotional functioning. It's not to say, and let me just add too, which is really interesting, something that just I was just reminded of. Weirdly, even before the pandemic, loneliness has increased as a phenomenon, even though social media use has increased. So someone could say, look, I'm connected to thousands of people. I have thousands of friends. But that very same person might feel incredibly lonely. And loneliness is not something to ignore. Loneliness has been compared to smoking 15 cigarettes a day, just in terms of the impact that it has on our mental and physical health. So it's something that we should definitely address. If using social media actually makes you feel lonelier, then, you know, I definitely would step in and say something has to change. So in a way, I hope this answers the question. There are a variety of ways in which in-person connections are actually better for us, but it doesn't mean that we should completely eliminate all social media use or interactions, because they do, for some of us, give us some semblance of opportunity for connection.
Does the research show a vast distinction between image-based social media and text-based social media? So for example, Instagram, TikTok being in one category versus LinkedIn, Twitter, possibly even Reddit being in a different category?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I've only seen studies that look at passive social media use versus more engaging. And I shared that passive social media use can be more detrimental. My guess, this is just a hunch. I mean, I guess on Reddit, you can be a passive user and just, you know, read up. But it's less likely, you know, like I'm trying to like think about what my text versus images and videos. Really, my educated guess is that like a TikTok, it's so visual, right? That's going to be in that category of passive usage. So maybe there's some, you know, commingling of image-based and passive social media use.
That's an interesting question that Roxy poses, because I just spoke about my own personal usage of something like an Instagram or a TikTok where it's image or a video based. But I actually for sure found myself getting addicted to Twitter during the pandemic. And that's all text-based, right? Possibly because, you know, breaking news, there was so much going on. We were trying to find out so much information every day, everything from the political, the social environment, knowing what the hell this virus was doing, right? And so I found myself really like having to like literally get one of those digital wellness limits that literally tells you, hey, you've been on Twitter for like an hour. And so I would be like, all right, 5 more minutes, right? And then I found myself just not being able to stop looking at it, that eventually I was like, I need to work on this and not look at it, like for myself, like my own personal usage. And I've gotten way better at it, but I definitely found myself like addicted to just reading trying to consume every information out there that I could. And eventually I found out that it was not good for the human brain to even have access to that much information, especially when there's so much negative news out there.
It's great that you recognize that. And during the pandemic, there was a phrase that emerged called doom scrolling. And that is when we were all usually on Twitter, but very much text-based platforms. We were all morning, noon, night, evening, well into bedtime, just kind of like looking for more information, trying to have answers, solutions. We as humans don't deal with uncertainty very well. So we're just trying to make sense of all of the terrible things, unexplained things that were happening. And that was very common for people to actually feel worse after they were, you know, trying to feel better, if that makes sense.
What is the difference between genuine in contact connection and genuine online connection? Like, can our human need for connection be satisfied digitally?
It's something that is currently being explored and is very highly valued, this idea. I mean, we're going to get there in some way, right? Our future is going to be very AI-based. Are we at some point? I mean, I'm texting. People can text with an AI therapist, right? There's so many advancements in technology that have given us opportunities to better ourselves. And yet, I think that for behavioral health scientists, this continues to be a concern. What are we giving up in terms of these in-person connections? So I don't have a clear answer for that because there's an emerging amount of research about this, but also it's hard to find persons who don't have a combination. Most of us have a combination of digital experiences and in-person experiences. And no ethical study would just put someone in a box and limit them to digital connections. But the research that currently is out does show that there's something about the digital connections that might fall flat and may exacerbate or worsen mental health concerns. And let me also say, let me not be one-sided here. There's a ton of research that also looks at the benefits of digital relationships, like digital therapy and Zoom therapy and other formats where we're connecting with someone over a screen. And there are some good results with those types of interactions and platforms as well. I think what is a real interest for scientists is like, how can we really measure that in-person effect? Is it something chemical? You know, when we hug someone, for instance, we know that we can kind of induce some feel-good chemicals in the brain and hormones in the body. It's like fantastic, right? So we know already that there is that physical contact can actually make a huge difference in our mental health. But having said that, is that it? Is that all there is when it comes to in-person relationships? Is it really just touch, contact, proximity, or is there something more to that? Yeah, it's really super fascinating because we're just going to continue to evolve and have these advanced combinations, both digital and in-person experiences.
As this is being studied, it's interesting to me to look at my generation of kids that grew up without phones, right? Versus, you know, Roxy and Steph actually did grow up with phones. I didn't get one till college, and it wasn't a smartphone. It was just like a Nokia. It was like a Nokia, like the only thing I could play was a little snake game. Remember that?
Oh yeah, I remember the snake game.
Yeah, so I was an adult already by then, right? So I'm curious like what the studies on that are, but what you're talking about specifically, I definitely feel, especially after being isolated during lockdown, when I go to a live music performance at a concert, the atmosphere I get just from being in a crowd of people and everybody's dancing or singing or very passionate together, like that's a completely different feeling than the small joy that I do get when, you know, something crazy happens in the world, like Trump got COVID or the Queen died, and I get to read all these funny tweets about it. Like, that's really fun for me, but it's definitely not the same.
I love that you're pointing that out. I was seeing Black Panther 2, Wakanda Forever in the theater, and you just build off of each other's emotions, a community experiencing and reacting to emotional cues. You can't really replicate that in a digital space. There's, of course, VR. And VR is not my specialty, but there's a ton of VR research that's trying to replicate that. But just that human reaction that's done at a group level, at a community level, where you're hearing the laughter, you're even sensing each other's emotions, and even something like sadness, which doesn't really necessarily have a sound, right? But you can actually feel that with one another. Grief is something that has come up a lot during the pandemic, and certainly notwithstanding the pandemic. And grief is something that is an experience that everyone handles differently, but certainly is one of those areas where an in-person interaction might facilitate recovery better than a digital interaction. So these are the kinds of things, the nuances, the context, you know, what Roxy was saying, like how different people might have different actual emotional repertoires. All these things matter when it comes to assessing the importance of these platforms.
Yeah, it's wild because I find I have such a positive relationship with social media. I'm also on it significantly more than either of these girls. I also run a social media account for 3 different companies, all with thousands of followers. I've also been able to use social media to build a platform to get myself hired at multiple different companies. And I've also been able to use it to expand this company, The Whirl Girls, to get people to buy our merch, to see our content, to find out who we are. So I feel very grateful for social media in a way that I do feel like I find myself standing up for it as if it's a friend of mine that has a lot of positive benefits that nobody speaks about anymore because it's very taboo and people like to completely shit on social media, even the people who use it. Not that any of us here are doing that, but I do think people rag on it a lot. And so I am curious, for people living in the in 2022 right now, it is almost unavoidable to some extent. If you are a person who is trying to sell a product, if you are a person with a small business, if you are a person who is the product that you're trying to sell, it is very difficult to advance your career or your company and have zero social media presence. So for the people who have to be on social media, what do you say in terms of how to make it a more healthy experience for them?
I think there are some really useful strategies that we can all work on to make our experiences more positive, some of which actually you gave examples of, you're kind of exemplifying. The first part of this is reframing our relationship. It's not so much I have to use social media, it's I get to use social media. This is a relationship that is healthy. It's mutual. I'm a willing participant, and I am totally committed to making this a positive and lasting relationship, right? Is it true that social media might be the longest relationship we'll ever have? I mean, for some people, not for me, but for some people, maybe, right? So treat it with that honor and that humility and that love. More specifically, okay, like really, what are we talking about? What are the practices? One you mentioned, which is to be purposeful. It's not great for our mental health and well-being to just click on the apps and just scroll through without purpose. You know, if you go on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, have a plan. Each time you go on that site, it could be I'm going to post something, so I'm going to engage. And that interaction in and of itself can be healthy for us. It's very affirming. There are some studies that show that curating our own profile by posting is affirming, and that's very positive for us. There's this concept called self-verification theory. We want others to perceive us the way that we perceive ourselves. The most healthy thing to do is to be authentic in your posts, in what you share. And it's kind of hard because we don't show everything that we do, but try to be real. Realness is going to feel better and it's going to have better impact on our communities. So be purposeful. Maybe your purpose is checking in on like your sister-in-law's honeymoon. You want to see how that vacation went, or you want to look up a certain brand or company and see what they're tweeting about. Or information, you want specific information, right? So that's like something that's really solid and I think can be well-defined, is that each time you use whatever platform you're using, just be purposeful about it. One other method that does not have to be permanent is some kind of digital detox or a cleanse. And this has to be individualized for everyone because like some of us rely on social media for work. Like this is a part of our job, right? So we need to be planful about it. When can I take the recommended dose of this is like a full week. And it doesn't have to be complete. It doesn't have to be like all of social media. It may be a certain menu of things that you're gonna remove for a week and then come back to it. What we'll find is that anxiety might increase the first or second day because we're experiencing FOMO or we're unsure about what we're missing. But, you know, again, as long as you're not missing work or those critical, literally like how you make your bread and butter, like if you're able to work around this, that's also a good strategy to use. There's actually a study called Quitting Facebook, and the study found that people who quit for a week, they didn't quit forever, they just quit for a week, their mental health improved over that period of time. So those are sort of the concrete strategies. The other ways to further examine social media and how to manage that can include sort of a conceptual frame of mind. And that's, again, to kind of think about how can I decrease helplessness around this, decrease feeling that I'm out of control, and harness a level of utility and usefulness around this. This is something that, you know, you switch energy about it. It's not that it controls you. You control the social media. And, you know, look at the patterns. If there's something that really makes you feel shitty, there's for some reason, sometimes I still have people in my feed and I kind of feel shitty about it, but I don't, you know, block them or remove them from the feed. Like, just do it. Just do it. You won't miss much. Lastly, I mentioned sleep earlier in the session. This is a tough thing to do, but before bed, we can't have these screens on. An hour before bed, whatever notification or email or post you want to do, just make sure you do it an hour before bed and then put the phone somewhere away from you. Laying down in bed and looking at social media as the last thing we do is hands down one of the worst things we can do. It has to do with the kind of light that we're forcing into our eyeballs. It has to do with the general activity we're making our brain do before we're supposed to kind of, you know, go down for a night's rest. And it has a lot to do with whatever you're looking at contextually that may dial up some feelings that may be hard to dial down when you're trying to go to sleep. So some people even have a separate old school alarm clock, which I had growing up and probably well into my early 20s, an old school alarm clock, set that up and try to have that hour before bed, an hour after waking up without social media.
And it's different than watching television when you're going to bed. Social media right before bed is different than falling asleep to a movie?
Yes, in a couple of ways. I'd also say like that screen, it depends on how you're watching the movie. Like, are you watching Netflix on your phone? And like, that might be distracting. That might not be helpful. But look, any kind of bright screen emitting that kind of light as we're falling asleep is not healthy. But that's an example that where it's kind of passive and it's a storytelling thing and you're just sort of like allowing it to lull you to bed. For some people, they can't fall asleep without some music or something in the background, and that's their jam. So I'd say if you need to pick one or the other, having a movie on with a sleep timer is better than having your phone next to you.
Dr. Drea, I really liked how you've been talking about being intentional and not the doom scrolling, because the thing that I find to be one of the scariest parts about social media is that, and I caught myself doing this, it's like whether we realize it or not, I think a lot of us subconsciously enter these apps and we're like, tell me what I'm thinking today. And it like tells you what your mood's gonna be, or like what is the mode of the day, the mood of the day. And that's freaky to me. like instead of being like, I really love that technique of, okay, I'm gonna go on to do this, like just specific things like that. Because I never thought about it like that, where you're like, I just go on and then you're like just turning something on without any thought of it at all. And then it just becomes, there's nothing special about it.
Yeah, it's been called a mood regulation tool, meaning that some people kind of at maybe even a subconscious level, it's like, oh, I'm bored, or my mind, I can't be alone with myself, or whatever is going on with you. You grab your phone. And it's like, okay, whatever app I'm going to turn on, Instagram, Twitter, or whatever, Facebook. And that mood regulation tool means that just like you said, we're relying on this outside activity, this outside conversation, this outside feed to tell us what to think or what mood we're in. Or mainly the scientific aspect of this is it's the distraction. And so if folks find themselves doing this, the ask of you is, what are you distracting yourself from when you have the urge to grab that phone and start passively looking at feeds? What is it that you would be doing if you didn't grab that phone? Is it that you could be processing something that's tough, but something that you really need to face, something that's really important to you? Is it that you could call up a friend or a family member, or have a different type of interaction? Or for some people, it's spending quality time just on your own without any kind of outside activity or stimulus. And for some people, that's really hard because being alone with their brain makes them feel certain ways, but could be helpful when they realize some of the positive aspects of that. It can be affirming. It can generate creativity. Something that social media does is it really blocks creativity. So when you have access to feelings, creativity, even for some people, mindfulness or spirituality or whatever, you know, whatever they feel, that could be much more important than looking at something that just they may forget about. A cat video that they'll forget about in a few seconds.
Can you expand on social media blocks creativity?
Yeah, so some studies look at the amount of time people are on social media, kind of like a lot of these studies look at the distracting elements of it and how, you know, let me again repeat, for people who have existing ADHD, access to these platforms is going to exacerbate their ADHD, or sometimes worsen their ability to concentrate. Studies now tell us that we have 20 seconds of attention until we're looking on, specific to social media. We have 20 seconds of focused attention on a specific social media platform until we switch to something else. So yeah, it's a huge area of interest. And folks find that they're able to access creativity and some of their own internal creative original thoughts when they're not on social media. You know, and again, it's going to matter depending on what you're doing on social media and who the person is. But that's been the general understanding, is kind of the link to the social media being a distraction and taking away from our more grounded, longstanding attention. And for some people, that takes us away from our work, our projects, our art, even.
I love what you said, other than this, everything you said, everything that comes out of Dr. Drea's mouth is amazing, but especially about the purposefulness as well as the authenticity, because I know here at The World Girls, that's literally our brand, is to be our authentic selves. Anytime we're online, whether it's on YouTube, whether it is on social media. And I think that's why the people come to us. So that's how we're fighting these owners of the social media. It's like, you want us to be the product, we're going to be the most authentic product in hell. So there you go. We do have a question here from our lovely patron, George Pruitt, who asked Dr. Drea, what do I do when I feel that I don't feel welcome in the world?
I really like this question because I think a lot of us can relate to that feeling. In fact, as I mentioned, if it's related to loneliness, loneliness is something that's occurring more frequently in our society, despite the emergence of so many social media apps. But also at some point, every one of us might have this feeling, if it's for a day or if it's for years. So I just appreciate the question. I'd say specific to the individual who's asking it, you know, again, let me repeat that if you have the opportunity to speak with someone in detail about those feelings, what prompts those feelings, whether it comes and goes, and what's not working, right? So I have the inability to have that exchange because I'm not their provider, but I'd say if you have the opportunity to speak to someone in a confidential setting, and I will at the end of the show name a resource for people to access that. So that's the first piece of advice, is pay attention to this. It's important. You are important. You matter. And you clearly want this to change. So it's advised that you talk to someone about it. I would say, just kind of given the conversation we're having, a take home here is, like, we're all different and we have different relationships with these different social opportunities and social interactions. And I think what's really wonderful and terrific about where we are in society is that we have choices, we have options, and hopefully this caller with the question has those opportunities to explore those different facets and outlets for being your authentic self. So where can you go to be your authentic self? Is it, you know, again, one of these platforms? I mentioned at the top of the hour, I have had an experience where I'm quite invisible in the traditional spaces I've been in, educationally, academically, in life, right? And so being able to have more visibility and community on a platform like Twitter has been a life changer, because I feel visible, I feel affirmed, I feel like my voice matters and people are listening. So I encourage this caller to sort of look at the different ways in which, again, we're not rejecting these platforms, because that's not what this is about, but it's looking at what are the different avenues that might have those amazing connections and feelings like, oh, I could be my real authentic self in this space because others understand me or others are like me. And I know that's a very generic answer, but, you know, again, I think somebody who could talk to you more deeply about what's going on with you is really the main advice here.
So the last segment of today's podcast, Drea, is pros and cons. Can you talk to us a little bit about the pros and cons of either both social media and or just having a smartphone?
Well, let's be strength-based and start with the pros. I'd say that I would never outright reject or even delete any of these platforms, the ones that we've mentioned, because there's evidence that usage can be detrimental to our mental health. So the pros are that you have access to information, to people, to opportunities, and it could be literally your livelihood. I think that there are more opportunities for visibility and advancement and evolution individually and for a society out there because of these platforms than not. So those are the pros. The cons, where do we begin? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I'll kind of switch topics here a little bit and say that when these platforms, like, I love that these platforms can be spaces of entertainment and silliness and distraction and feel good things. When they get commandeered to spread hate, is when I'm just like, y'all figured this out wrong. Like, this is, that I think is something that really needs to be better handled. I'll leave it at that.
She was worried she was going to break my heart, so she left it at that.
No, and again, let me say quickly, based on what y'all shared, no one is doing this wrong. You are doing what's best for your health, and we continue to evolve and change, right? My relationship may be different with several of these platforms in like 6 months to a year, right? So continue to be explorative and curious. That's such an amazing part of this, is our ability to be curious and make decisions and be consumers. That's the whole point, is that we're consumers as well as the commodities. And then, as I mentioned, for everybody, regardless of whether you think it might be because of social media use, please use 988 as a crisis line. It's kind of like 911, but it's for mental health emergencies. So if you're not sure, you don't have a mental health provider or therapist, you don't know where to start, and you're based in the US, you can call 988 or text 988, and they will speak with you candidly, confidentially, and in a supportive way.
Well, there you have it, kids. Dr. Drea, you're amazing. Thanks so much for being with us again. We always learn so much with you, and we'll hopefully have you back for another topic that I'm sure everybody's very interested in. This is quite the topic to talk about in the current times we're living, so we really appreciate your time and expertise. Unlike the last episode, I did not go through Dr. Drea's incredibly impressive long-ass resume, but you can definitely check her out at drdreapsychology.com. And Drea, I would love it if you could share to the people where they can find you.
You know what? I will just say, check out the Arkham Sessions. It is the podcast that I created and currently host. It's all about mental health and pop culture narratives. So the Arkham Sessions, originally covering Batman, the animated series, and now covering Marvel, Star Wars, all sorts of storytelling in our media. And it is basically sort of like this. Like, we talk about mental health and well-being and the strategies that we can use to improve ourselves in very practical ways.
There you have it, kids. Thanks so much for being a bitch out of water with us and listening to us try to make sense of this strange digital world. If you want to get all the World Girl things, go to patreon.com/theworldgirl so you can watch our podcast tapings live, ask questions, see our faces, and get a bunch of cool benefits while being part of the best community on the internet. You can also email us at contact@theworldgirls.com. We go live on youtube.com/theworldgirls every Monday and Wednesday. And don't forget to follow us on social media, because we know you're there on Twitter, TikTok @theworldgirls, and on Instagram @worldgirlswap. We recently started this podcast, so please tell your friends about us, subscribe, leave a review. We're all gonna die. So don't be a dick, especially when you're looking at a screen instead of a human's face. Stay wet, my friends.